Welcome to Forward, a podcast by EasyCare, where we protect what moves you with your host, Corey Smith, and co-host, Eric Howdige. The views and opinions expressed by guests in this podcast may not be those of the host or EasyCare and APCO Holdings Brands.
Welcome to Forward. I'm your host, Corey Smith, National Fixed Operations Training Director with EasyCare. Today, I'm being joined by my partner in crime, my good friend, Eric Howdige.
Corey, how you doing? How's everybody doing?
Great. It was a great week of training, traveling. I'm very blessed to do with the job that we do, and I'm sure you feel the same way.
Absolutely.
This is just you and I talking. We don't have a special guest, but we're going to really dive into winning the service game, new plays for 2026 and beyond. So, Eric, before we really jump into this topic, and you and I talked about this a few weeks ago, service isn't a department anymore. It's the dealership's profit engine. And the store that treats it like that will dominate the next decade. If you do the same thing that you did in 1990, you're going to be left behind. Your service department is going to be empty. So if we do like a recap, we know that we talked about in the last episode, Eric, just you and I, advisors are overloaded. Technician shortage is real. Customers are smarter and corporate demands are heavier. Today, we're going to give you real plays to win, no theories, right, Eric? So I'll open it up with, how do you turn the service drive into a sales floor?
Oh, I just had this conversation with an owner. So I was in one of those moments in the class with the large group of people, and you know, sometimes my passion get the best of me, right? And the service advisors, I mean, we were just talking experiences with customers before the class started. And it was a great moment. I got tapped on the shoulder and asked to step into the office after class. And they asked me, and the question was, we're building a new building. We'd like to get your perspective on it, because we loved what you were saying in there. It's like, wow, that was really cool. I was like, okay, I didn't realize you were listening to that degree. And I don't think they'll do it, but I think that the system of future stores being built this way for this dealer group may be something that may eventually start to happen. But it was putting the service department and the showroom in the exact same front line. Not one is more important than the other. And I hear too many times people say the back of the store, or I hear people say the backbone, right? No. The service department, just think about how popular it can be that I'm purchasing a vehicle. And while you're purchasing the vehicle, not only is the vehicle itself the highlight, but how we take care of you, not after you buy the car, that after sales needs to completely change. It's not after you buy the car. It's while you own your vehicle. And life of ownership for customers, if I'm having a good experience with my particular car, two things are going to happen. Number one, I'm going to consider the brand. That's brand loyalty, mm-hmm. Right?
I agree with that.
And number two, if I'm being taken care of in the service department, not the back of the store, if I'm being taken care of and every time I pull up after I purchased my vehicle, and I'm being pulled up and I'm being treated with that same high, if not higher level customer experience after I buy my car, why would I not be loyal to the brand that's at the front of the building?
Right.
So if you're looking to change how your customers see you, which it's going to change, it's already here. It's taking care of your customer, the purchasing part. It doesn't have to be a minimal part. It doesn't have to be a least important part. It just has to be part of a life cycle. And I've seen one store already in this country get built where the service department is the front of the store. And to me, and I'm sure there's multiple, I've only seen one, but to me, as stores begin to build and people get service, taking care of the customer during the purchase of the vehicle needs to be more important than when they purchase their vehicle if I want to see that customer come back to my store.
Yeah, I agree. And then to your point, Eric, and I agree with all those points, most service drives operate like they have a waiting room, a check-in counter, a complaint desk, right? But to your point, elite stores have a sales floor, a customer experience center, a trust-building environment. What winning stores do differently? Advisors stand. They don't sit. Walk around on every vehicle. We do it in sales. The trade walk is the same thing as a walk around for service. I won't trade a customer out of a vehicle without doing some kind of a trade walk with that customer. The same standard has to be the same in your service department. Set expectations before problems arise. Ask discovery questions. Example, I'll give you one. How long are you planning to keep this vehicle? Eric talks about this all the time, right? Why do we want to know that, Eric?
It's one of my three checkpoints, because when I present to the customer, I'm going to present according to the customer's life plans.
Yes. If I say, I'm your customer, Eric, and I say, oh, I'm going to get rid of it in the next 90 days. That doesn't mean that when you get a laundry list of stuff from the multi-point inspection that you don't go into Mr. Smith and say, hey, Mr. Smith, I know you're getting rid of this in 90 days. I'm not even going to talk to you about this stuff.
No.
That's wrong. You still want to talk about it. Say, hey, Corey, I know you're getting rid of this in 90 days. You may want to get rid of it sooner because you've got this, this, and this that are safety items, or invest money into this vehicle and keep it a little longer. What would you like to do? Right? That's a good question. I can't. One thing I would ask you, Eric, and I can't wait to hear the answer to this. Why do advisors hesitate to ask deep questions?
Well, the first thing is a confidence in being able to maintain, sustain, and have a result on actually having just a human conversation with the customer. And I ask this to advisors all the time. Who repairs the vehicle? The technician. And I ask advisors, what do you repair? Sometimes I get blank looks, right? And I get the thinking. We are customer technicians. That's what we do. We fix the customer. So in order for you to be able to fix a customer, in order for you to be able to help a customer, you must be able to identify different stress points that the customer wants instead of just going right after the vehicle. Our questions in our walk around are targeted not only to increase the experience, but it lowers the stress of two very important positions. The customer, and here's the big one, Corey, the employee stress, the service advisor stress. Our education system, our walk around systems are targeted to lower service advisor stress. As I tell advisors, I am not the person directly working with your customers. I'm not. You are. So our training is set up so that you can understand how to make your experience as a service advisor a better experience, because then indirectly or directly, you are then going to be able to improve the customer experience. That's where the education system's at.
I love that. So play number two, Eric, and I know you're going to love this because you're just going to get really excited. I just know you are. Weaponize your data.
Oh.
Most dealerships track KPIs.
Yes.
Winning dealerships coach for KPIs. What is the difference, Eric?
So, there's popular KPIs, and I won't mention it on this podcast. I'll have people hear a different podcast to learn and know which KPIs I do not agree with and I don't like. But here's the difference. When you have somebody that you call them in, or you need to talk to them near their desk, or you send them an email, whatever communication format you have and style that you prefer, when you send somebody, your effective labor rate is low, or your hours per hour are low, or your gross profit percentage is low, whatever number you're targeting as a manager, because I don't think people understand that that's a lack of leadership at this moment. As a manager, why are you color coordinating it in red? It's the first question I ask. Why red? Well, I need to let the person know that it's bad, or I need to let the person know that it's a warning system. Okay, well, the person receiving it doesn't take it as a motivator. Let's just start. If I'm looking to motivate the person who's got percentages or numbers or metrics that are down, why would I send somebody a metric that's going to get them upset when they open and click? And I ask this, now I deal with thousands of advisors across the countries, and I ask questions because I do research, and I ask, how many people love opening up your metric email? Corey, I would tell you that the number is probably less than 10% of people who do not like to open up a metric email. The reason is because it's communication to that employee is not motivating. If I then coach somebody and I say, hey, your effective labor rate is at this number. Let's just use effective labor rate is at, here, this number that I love to use. I love to use percentage of door rate. So just to talk, just apples to apples, let's just use percentage of door rate. Your percentage of your door rate is at 64%. And let's say the store has a condition of benchmarking it at 75% to 80%. Let's just use 80% for the sake of simple math. So number one, service advisor, do you know what it means to be at 68%? I need to know that you understand it. Okay, so now here, let's do a printout, because I don't think that it's not that you're not presenting. I don't think that it's not that you're not selling, because if I thought those two things, first of all, as a leader, why would I have you on my team? Let's see what language you're using. Let's see what tonality, what time of presentation, at what point are you doing this, to see if there's targeted areas that I can help you with, because it can really change how you do this. There's certain service advisors that are not fans of presenting a maintenance menu at the time of write-up. Let's talk about it. Why? It's part of our process. So being able to coach somebody and understand their perspective and being able to curve how they do things so that they can do it. First, I want an employee to do it 2 out of 10 times. Then I'm going to get them to do it 4 out of 10 times, 6 out of 10 times, till I get them to 10 out of 10. And here's how I do things. Number one, calling somebody out isn't going to motivate anybody. Positive.
I'm going to do the opposite.
Positive reinforcement. And I learned this so much. It, again, not that I work here, but I learned this so much from the Easy Care leadership. Oh my God. It's the amount of you did this right makes you as an employee, makes you want to do that much more right. Hey, you did 6 out of those 10 steps. Amazing. You did great at 6 out of those 10 steps, right? That's a coach. So as an employee, I'm listening to it and I'm going, I wonder if I did 7 or 8, you know, how happy this moment could be, right? So now I'm striving for that 7 or 8. Instead of going out there and saying, hey, you missed 4 steps out of the 10. I need you to get the other 4. As an employee, you can imagine all the things that are going inside of that employee's mind of how they think about that manager, not the leader. So I learned this so much in the first few months that I was here. I was culture confused for a second. I was like, wait a minute. I only did like 5 out of the 10 steps right. And why am I getting a pat on the back and a high five? Well, I imagine what happens if I get 7 out of the 10 next, right? Now I can't wait to get 10 out of 10. That's the difference, Corey.
Yeah. So quite simply, what Mr. Howdige is talking about here is your key KPI reviews, review them daily. ELR needs to be reviewed daily. Review CPRO hours per repair order daily. Review approvals percentage daily. Have short huddles. What did we miss yesterday? What was your big win? What's one improvement today that you're going to work on? Right. These are new ideas that we're thinking, and great leaders and coaches do just that you're talking about, Eric. And I never got treated like that at a dealership. It was the total opposite. It was you suck, you suck, you suck, you suck.
Yeah, right? That's the feeling you get.
Right. So let's talk about missed opportunities.
Oh, I got a big one, Corey. I got a big one. I've been, and I think you're going to love this one. I actually really, really think you're going to love this one. Here is to me, one of the biggest, not service advisor, dealership missed opportunities. Okay. How much training does an F&I manager, director get on extended warranty products?
Oh my gosh. Daily, before they even talk to a customer.
Why isn't the service advisor being trained at the exact same time? For two reasons. Number one, so that the service advisor learns the product, so that when the customer does come in, they know what number to call, they know what person to reach, they know how to run the contracts, all the above, right? Why does a service advisor not sit in with the F&I team so that they even, some advisors don't even know the company, right? Now, here's a second opportunity. What is a point of an extended warranty contract? The point of an extended warranty contract is, number one, to protect the customer. To protect the customer from any outside incident cost repair that they don't have to pay for. Okay? Why, if after the sale is made, again, there goes that word, after sale, if the F&I manager is no longer in contact on a yearly basis with this customer, why isn't the service advisor not putting this in front of the customer so that we can not only protect the customer, but retain the customer in our store after the manufacturer warranty ends?
I'm just going to say that's a mic drop, ladies and gentlemen.
I knew you'd love that, Corey.
I have nothing that is perfect, right? For missed opportunities, that's one of your bigger ones. I think if we really look at things that I can track, declined services, undersold multi-point inspections, and missed maintenance intervals, the advisor's too afraid to talk about some of these things. A, they haven't been educated on it, and B, they're afraid that the customer is going to say no. Nobody wants to be rejected. Do you really think I want to go into a training class with 10, 20 people in it, knowing that they don't want to be here and they don't like me already, right?
How do advisors feel? Corey, I ask you this question. How do advisors feel in your classes when they walk into class and they know their metrics are not top five, right? Top three, top 10%?
Oh, they feel like they're, most of them, feel inadequate.
Yeah, right? What am I doing here? Why should I be?
I need to go work someplace else, right? That's what, not another dealership, but maybe in a different field. And I got to tell you, it's fine to have those feelings. This industry is amazing, and there are some dealerships and managers that are passionate about it, that get it, right? So let me ask you this question, Eric. If your advisors don't know their numbers, they're not professionals. They're just processors. That really hits hard. How do you, as a manager, educate your advisors on knowing their numbers?
So let me start off by saying this is not a fault of the advisor or a fault of the management. Nobody knows what they don't know. And I put this out there for the advice of the managers. Not only should you be giving your team the information, if not on a daily basis, on a every other day basis, but this should really be daily basis, no ifs, ands, or buts. Whatever metrics are important to you, those are the metrics you should be reporting to them on. But along with that is, what does these metrics mean in our world? Why do I want you to be at gross profit percentage? Why do I want you to be at hours per RO or effective labor rate or whatever the number is going to be? Being able to explain how all those numbers work together for the collective goal of our store is key. Not just send them the numbers. Sending them the numbers is only half the battle. The other half of the win is telling them what those numbers mean and how they actually affect our growth.
Amen. All right, Eric. True or false? A service department wins as a team or loses as a silo?
Ooh, true or false? Well, true, a service department only wins as a team.
Right.
False.
And that's every person that's in the service department, from the greeter, the porter, the technician, the wash kid, the advisors, the parts department, leadership. What's missing? What's frustrating the techs? What's slowing down approvals? And how can advisors pre-sell better? Those are the topics I would have in a weekly 15-minute meeting, so you're not treating everybody like a silo.
Yeah, one of the biggest things that's an impact is every position, and it happened to me where somebody said a particular position wasn't important. And I said, oh, really? He said, then let's do this. I'm sending all the porters home for the next week. Let me know how your car washes go. Let me know how your CSI works, because they play a major part, right? Oh, the parts department. Okay, well, then let's send the parts counter person home and let's see how your parts get ordered. Or an express technician or a dispatcher. Every single piece that is used as a team has to be skilled, educated, high level. But most importantly, we need to know how we work as a team. And one of the most important exercises that I can ask people to do is to rotate your positions. And what do I mean by that? I don't mean make an advisor a technician for forever. No, have an advisor be a technician for a day. Have them go do MPIs. Have a technician go sit at the service advisor's desk. Have a service advisor go sit with BDC or go sit in the parts department. Being able to see how important the role and how much work each role puts into it really has you understand. That was such a big benefit I had. And you don't understand while it's happening, but I started off as a porter. Then I went into the parts department. I was a parts driver. Then I went into being a parts counter person. Then I went into being, well, it wasn't express back at the day. They called it floater. And then I went into being a writer. So when I made it to management, I had an understanding what everybody felt. As a matter of fact, I was even a cashier for a time, for a small time. I knew what these people felt. And too many times the leaders themselves or the people in those positions don't feel that, Corey.
Amen. So, all right, play number four, redefine follow-up. We talked about this last podcast that we were on, just you and I. Most stores, follow-up, call once, send one text, move on. Winning stores, three-touch follow-up minimum. Use video for declined work. Personalized messaging, not automated. Let's talk about their vehicle. So if we really look at some new ideas, and we're right up against the time, Eric, but I really want to talk about this advisor personal brand strategy. And what do I mean by that? Encourage advisors to introduce themselves on video. Send a quick thank you clip. Be memorable. Retention becomes personal. I want you to come back and see me. That's why we're making the next service appointment. All right, play number five, create performance-based culture. I live in this lane, Eric. You know that.
Yes.
Minimum performance standards, dress code reinforcement. I don't know how many times I've been in the service department where I don't know who works there, or they are wearing a logo, but there's no name tag, and they don't tuck in their shirt. Professional appearance is everything. Have a scoreboard and accountability. You don't raise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your standards. Let me say that again. You don't raise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your standards.
Love it.
High performing stores have clear expectations, clear metrics, and clear consequences. You don't do this, this is what's going to happen, right? So Eric, I ask you this in closing. If dealers want How do I say this? If dealers want to win the service game in 2026, what's the first thing they need to fix?
Culture. That's the first thing. And it's not all of it, because that word can be very cliche very quickly. But let me tell you what I mean by culture. Practice culture. That's the part that the store needs to know, that training and practicing is just part of what we do.
And can you do it as a manager just sitting in your office all day?
Yes, that is the best advertisement you can have, is when you're practicing by yourself in the office and your team walks in on you, or your team can see you through the windows and they knock and they go, "Are you crazy? What's going on?" And I say, "No, I'm just practicing." And that you need to make sure that moving forward, whatever it is that you do, that practice culture is going to be key.
Hallelujah. So the service game isn't about selling more oil changes. It's about building trust, protecting technicians' productivity, and coaching advisors like professionals.
Yes.
Amen. Eric, that is all the time that we have for this episode. I love this topic. I think we should really feed off that and really talk about more about technicians and how that is going to evolve, right? I think as we go forward in 2026, this is going to be a big push. So I think this is a great topic to talk about, and I hope everybody got some value out of it. EasyCare is a total performance provider working alongside your team to help achieve your goals in F&I and across the dealership. We are an award-winning provider and administrator of F&I products and can provide the tools, knowledge, and training needed to unlock the potential of your dealership. For more information on EasyCare or to be a guest on Forward, please feel free to send me an email at csmith@apcoholdings.com. Eric, thanks for the time today. I'll see you in a few weeks.
Thank you for listening to Forward, a podcast brought to you by EasyCare with your host, Corey Smith, and co-host Eric Houdigy. Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. New episodes are released on the 5th and 20th of every month.